episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
And I'm Manny.
This episode is DC Rebirth for September 14th. This week, there's a lot of DC Rebirth titles coming out, and we actually got advanced copies of most of them. So, going to be a very DC-heavy episode, as a lot of episodes have been recently. Manny did not necessarily read all of them, but I took it upon myself to get caught up on everything DC Rebirth related, plus Doom Patrol number one. So we're going to fire away, starting with Action Comics 963, written by Dan Jurgens. The art is by Patrick Zerker, and the colors are by Arif Prianto. The first issue of a new arc is what this book is all about. And in two words, I can sum it up for you. Well, maybe I should use four. And that is, who is Clark Kent? We saw in the first arc that Superman and Clark... So we know that the Superman of the New 52 died. We know before he died, his identity as Clark Kent had been revealed to the world. Then Action Comics, Rebirth Action Comics starts... And, you know, the numbers revert back to, what was it, 957, I think was the first issue. And we see Superman, Lex Luthor. We see Superman that we know is the pre-Flashpoint Superman. And we see Clark Kent, all coexisting on the page. But we know that Clark Kent was Superman. Clark Kent is Superman to some extent, even as it pertains to the pre-Flashpoint. So if the DC New 52 Superman died, then Clark Kent would have died too. They were one and the same, right? So, who is this Clark Kent? We have no idea. And it was one of the few complaints I had about the first story arc. I want to know, who is this Clark Kent? And Jurgens just has not given clue one. But with the second story arc starting, Action Comics 963... Superman Meet Clark Kent Part 1. We don't have many answers, but the answers are coming. We know for sure the answers are coming. We learn that this Clark Kent has absolutely no superpowers. He kind of just woke up one morning. He gives an explanation of, he just woke up one morning and he just knows he's Clark Kent. He has no memory of being Superman. He doesn't believe he's Superman, doesn't believe he ever was Superman. He gives an explanation at a press conference held by Lex Luthor, who now owns the Daily Planet, which I find very interesting because that was always kind of one of the sacred cows in the DC universe, that Lex Luthor was never able to own the Daily Planet. Daily Planet was always the newspaper that called him on his shenanigans. He had his own media empire or whatever that would always spin things just the way he wanted to make him look good, but the Daily Planet always called it like it was. I find it very interesting. I mean, it really seems like they're trying to turn Lex Luthor into a legit, not necessarily superhero, but a legit, like, up-and-up guy. But we just know that eventually he's going to fall because his ego is just too big. So the fact that he owns a Daily Planet, I just don't know if that sits that well with me. Being a longtime Superman reader, and something I'm going to have to ask Jurgens about next time I see him. But I digress. This press conference held by Lex Luthor, and this new Clark Kent comes to the podium and says, "Hey, the New 52 Superman came to me, said my life was in danger because of the story I was pursuing, that I should go into hiding. He would take my place because we resembled each other." And then Lois Lane revealed that Clark Kent was Superman and blah, blah, blah. Plausible, I guess, in a way. Nobody really seems to believe him. But at the same time, he clearly exists. He's clearly Clark Kent. He takes a lie detector test, even. That's administered, come to find out, by Batman himself, because Lex Luthor doesn't know what to make of this Clark Kent. Neither does the pre-Flashpoint Superman, neither does the Batman of this iteration of the DC Universe. So we're all in the dark. None of us really know who this guy is at this point. but it sounds like we're going to find out, and it should be interesting if nothing else. So what I love about this story, more than just the fact that I'm going to get the answers I've been looking for, is it shows what a great comic writer Dan Jurgens is. He's one of my favorite writers and one of my favorite creators, really. He's such a great guy, so nice, easy to talk to, down to earth. And, you know, up to this point, I've gone on record as saying his first arc really put the action in Action Comics. It's, you know, certain issues were just nothing but action from cover to cover. And yet, this is really a character piece now that he's telling. And even without, you know, a ton of superheroic action, the story is just as compelling. You know, his comics, he's not overly wordy, but he also doesn't write comics that you can be done in 5 minutes. You know, there's substance to the books that he writes. That being said, before I knew it, I was at the end of the issue, and I was like, ah, I wanted more. And that's, to me, always a sign of a really great, compelling read. So, Action Comics 693, I loved it. I thought it was great. The Patrick Zurcher art, I thought, suited the story very well. I love Zurcher's rendering. I love his delicate lines and his detail. If there's anything I don't like about his art, is often I feel in the action scenes that his art feels a bit stiff. And the storytelling is a little choppy. But overall, I thought the art was well done. And the colors by Prianto, he's been handling the colors on the book right from the start. And his colors, if anything, if there's a word I'd use to describe him, very realistic, very much the world outside your window. He uses a lot of, doesn't use a lot of primary colors. Everything looks very, very realistic. Yeah, that's just the best word to use. What'd you think of 693, Manny?
I thought it was a great issue. I did find it annoying, just because I really want to know the answer to the question of who is this Clark Kent.
So you're hoping Superman Meet Clark Kent is only two parts long, and we'll get all the answers next issue?
Well, that's the thing, that I kind of wanted answers last arc, and I felt some of those issues lasted too long. The Doomsday fight, I thought it lasted a little too long. And the main thing I wanted to know is, who is this Clark Kent? Who is this Clark Kent? And then, you know, we start off with this issue of who is Clark, who is the mysterious Clark Kent. We go through the press conference, lie detector test. Someone tries to shoot him. He's trying to almost be like a secret agent type reporter guy. And by the end of it, we still don't know who he is. But we know that he's not Superman, because Superman saves him. So I just wonder how much Jurgens is going to let us in on the next issue, because I have a bad feeling that we're still going to have to wait even longer. Yeah. And you know, every page that I got farther into it, I was expecting maybe get a hint. I've even gone back a couple times to see if maybe I missed something, maybe that there's something underlined that I should have been paying attention to all along, but I couldn't find anything. But, I mean, it is a very entertaining issue for that reason, because I want to know who he is.
Yeah, I mean, you won't be dropping Action Comics until you get this, you know.
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
And I hope it's a great answer. That's the problem. I mean, turning out to be something where I'm just like, is that it? Are you kidding me?
I have a feeling that it won't be a six issue. I agree with you. I think the first Doomsday issue or story arc probably should have been five issues, maybe even four. Might have been kind of tight to squeeze everything into four. I think five would have been better. I think six, it felt a little long. But yeah, I'm glad we're where we are now. And I'm also glad that Action is a weekly book. Although I have a feeling that if it wasn't a weekly book, the first story arc would not have lasted that long. We would have gotten some answers sooner as far as number issues wise. Still probably would have been around the same time frame. So maybe instead of six issues, the first story arc would have been three, and we'd be in the same place we are right now. Next up, we have All-Star Batman number 2, written by Scott Snyder, pencils by John Romita Jr., inks by Danny Mickey, colors by Dean White. The Backup, also written by Scott Snyder, has pencils and inks by Declan Shelby and colors by Jordy Belair. I have to be honest, I was disappointed in this issue. The first issue was so good, and this isn't a linear story. Even within the story itself, it starts out the first line in the book 2 days from now, and then it goes back, and we see Batman fighting Killer Croc and King Shark and some guy named Aaron Helsinger, Amygdala, the biggest criminal muscle, partial brain he has or whatever. So what happened to Gentleman Ghost? I was looking forward to seeing Batman fight Gentleman Ghost. I almost felt like, well, I must be missing an issue. And I didn't care for that. I didn't care for the way the story jumped around. The first issue was so strong. I was just hoping for more of that sensibility. This felt like a step backwards for me. And same with the art. I felt like the art on the first issue from John Romita Jr. was some of the best Romita art that I'd seen in a long time. Again, this felt like a step backward, especially as it pertains to the way he draws Two-Face in this issue. I just thought it looked horrible. So hopefully we see an improvement with issue 3, but... at this point, I wouldn't even... After reading the first issue, I would have recommended All-Star Batman to somebody if they asked me. So, yeah, pick it up. It's good. After this issue, I probably wouldn't recommend it. I'd be like, it's... The first two issues have been very inconsistent. One really good, one not so good. So I guess it's a wait-and-see kind of thing. And I also think about the way this would read in a trade. It would feel like the way the first issue ended, then to turn the page and see this, yeah, doesn't make sense at all. But I don't know, maybe Snyder will bring it back around, who knows. The backup feature was better. And I've enjoyed Declan Shelby's pencils in the past, but I don't know, I didn't necessarily enjoy them here. His Batman's good, his Duke is good. It just, the way he drew Zaz and the way he drew Duke's parents, I didn't care for it. It just bothered me for some reason. The colors are handled well, but, I come to expect excellence from Jordy Belair. So the backup feature, though, is strong plot-wise and story-wise and well-scripted by Snyder. But, yeah, definitely a step backwards for me. Did not enjoy issue 2 of All-Star Batman. What are your thoughts?
Well, you had the first thought I had too. I was looking through the issue, looking for Gentleman Ghost. And I was like, wait a minute, where's Gentleman Ghost at? So I thought maybe that assassin guy they had hired, maybe that was Gentleman Ghost. And no, that's probably not. And let me just say that is the worst Killer Croc I have ever seen in any form of media. That's bad. And then I hate the batarangs, the way that the batarangs are drawn. They're just so big, and they don't seem very efficient, to say the least. And then there's just some dialogue that I found very not Batman like when he takes the trunk. Killer Croc, Waylon Appaloosa called, they want their fool back, and then he has a moment where he gets jammed out of the tunnel. I don't know, I just found that really, really weird. And then, like, right afterwards, we get Cheshire and Copperhead. It was so choppy. You know, it seemed like it was probably edited by the same guys who edit the DC films. It was going back and forth. And then all of a sudden, now we're back, and it's Great White, Penguin, Black Mask, and some guy in a hood. I mean, I don't know. It's just everywhere. And the fact that I'm not a big fan of Romita's art doesn't help at all. So, yeah, I definitely and starting to put a foot out the door on this book. I think I got to give it another issue to see where we're at, but it was really disappointing. I thought they did a good job on the first book, but this one just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I almost wonder if Snyder's trying to fit in too many villains. It's like, okay, this is going to be the last Batman story I write. I'm going to put in every villain I ever had any remote interest in writing, even if they're only going to appear for a panel or two. Because the guy in the hood ends up being the KG Beast.
I know.
And that's weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. Jade showing up just for, basically an instant. Same thing with Jane Doe, who I've never even heard of. Copperhead, who I've never heard of. Yeah, it just... didn't care for this issue at all. I mean, it's Scott Snyder writing Batman. I'm probably in, unless the next issue drops in quality as much as the series did from issue 1 to issue 2. If it stays at this level, which is probably, an average, I might hang around just because I'm curious. And I do still want to see Gentleman Ghost. But if it's a quality continues to decline, I'll be out, which is crazy. I mean, it's Snyder. It's an all-star roster of artists, you would think. It's got to be good, but did not care for this issue. Next book I'm going to talk about is Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, number 2. Now, I know you're out on this book, didn't read it. Just quickly, writers Julie Benson, Shauna Benson, pencils by, actually pencils and inks by Claire Rowe and Roge Antonio, and colors by Alan Passalacqua. I'll just say it's more of the same. And in this case, that's a good thing. The writing continues to be very clever. Dialogue is done well by the Benson sisters. Again, I love the captions, the setting captions. They always have something clever to put there. Continuing the story of Barbara Gordon trying to find out who's using her name as Oracle. We're seeing more of the interaction between Batgirl and Black Canary and Huntress. Batman shows up in this issue. They handle his dialogue well. This book just continues to be really high quality, continues to be, shows that books can have female protagonists and be interesting and be good and show that, women superheroes are every bit as capable as male superheroes without being rah-rah in your face, male bashing, which, can happen sometimes when writers have an agenda. And I think that Julie Benson and Shauna Benson do have an agenda, and it's not to male bash or to say women superheroes are better than men superheroes. Their agenda is to write a good story. They're good writers, and it's showing through in the quality of the story that they're telling. The artist, Claire Rowe, has some help from Roge Antonio on this issue, as I said. Her art continues to be very strong. There are times when it looks amazing. There's other times when the rendering is not quite so good. But that being said, overall, the quality is high. And I can see that she's improving, probably gaining some confidence as she goes along. So really, really good story. If you're a fan of Batgirl, if you're a fan of the Birds of Prey from the past, you'll definitely enjoy what the Benson sisters and Claire Rowe are doing so far. The colors by Alan Pasolacqua. Most of this issue is set at night, and he does a good job of conveying that through the colors. He definitely tends to use a lot of bluish tones, you know, and that kind of suits who the Birds of Prey are as far as their coloring with their costumes and such. So it's high quality work. Pasolak was a talented creator, so I would expect no less from him. And I hope the Benson sisters are having a lot of fun on this, because it certainly seems like they are, based on how much fun I'm having as a reader reading the book. So next up we have Deathstroke number 2, written by Christopher Priest, breakdowns by Larry Hama, pencils by Carlo Pagulian, inks by Jason Paz, and colors by Jeremy Cox. I still have faith in Christopher Priest, but after 3 issues, the Deathstroke one-shot, Deathstroke number 1, and Deathstroke number 2, man, I'm just confused. I feel like I'm working really hard to try to understand what's going on here, but I don't know, and maybe it's just, how can I say this? A drawback, let's say, of modern comics, how they tend to have less exposition, less dialogue boxes, just less explanation overall. You know, the art in comics these days is more detailed and more high quality than ever before. So there's a tendency to put fewer words in the books. And that's not necessarily the style of storytelling that was prevalent in comics when Christopher Priest came up in the industry. And so, I don't know, I'm just having a really tough time. And I'm reading the books and I'm enjoying the art. The art by Pagulian, Hama, Paz, and Cox is second to none. It's gorgeous, gorgeous art. Really good storytelling. Beautiful layouts. Rendering really great. Beautiful colors that really pop off the page. And so I'm glad for that, because with bad art, I probably would drop the book, honestly, because I'm struggling to just put all the characters. I think that Priest is trying to tell a very complex story here. And again, fewer pages than he's used to having in a monthly comic, and less words and less dialogue and less exposition and less dialogue boxes than he's used to having. And it's making it just a little hard to follow at this point. So it may be that it's not until the first arc is finished that we go back and we can kind of line up all the characters and figure out where he's coming from with everything. And so maybe this may be one of those ones that just reads better in a trade. That being said, I'm still going to continue to pick up the monthly issues because I have faith in Christopher Priest. And I like Deathstroke as a character. But it's just, man, the book just seems so, there's so many characters. And it's just, I'm just a little confused at this point, I have to be honest. What are your thoughts, Manny?
I second your comments. I for a second I went to the cover page to see if it had Warren Ellis's name on it, because some of his books are just as confusing. I love the artwork, so I can go through the book and really, really enjoy that. But as far as, I have no idea what the heck's going on. I wish there would have been a little bit more interesting Deathstroke book, but at this point, I'm really out on this book, just because I wouldn't know how to sell it to anyone.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on. Detective Comics number 940, written by James Tynan, pencils by Eddie Burrows, inks by Abra Ferreira, colors by Adriana Lucas. This is going to be the book that has everybody talking. This wasn't even sent in the advance solicits that we normally get on Fridays. This wasn't sent out until today, and I'm sure it was because they didn't want spoilers. I mean, there's already been so many rumors about Tim Drake and all kinds of crazy stuff, and so I'm sure they were trying to limit that as much as possible. So that being said, if you haven't gone out and picked up your books today and you don't want to be spoiled, you probably should skip ahead until we're no longer talking about Detectives Comics number 940, because man, oh man, Somebody asked James Tynan flat out at one of the DC panels at San Diego if the rumors are true that Tim Drake was going to be killed. And he said, I'll answer it this way. Tim Drake is my favorite character. I have no plans to kill him. But we've seen what's been going on in Detective Comics. The writing's been on the wall. And it seemed like that was a flat-out lie. And, you know, I didn't skip through. You know, I didn't, you know, scroll to the last page to see what happened, whatever. I just read it, you know, first page and read. And, yeah, it sure appeared that he was dead, man. And it got me. Tim Drake's my favorite Robin. I was like, oh, man. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, he's a comic character. I wonder how they'll bring him back. Maybe it'll have to do with the whole DC Rebirth thing, reboot the universe again, or do some kind of something or other and get him back. But then it ties into Rebirth in a way not necessarily expected. Come to find out, it looks like Ozymandias, much like he spirited away Doomsday right before he was going to be sent to the Phantom Zone, it looks like he saved Tim Drake from certain death at the last possible moment. And Detective Comics 940 ties into the larger story of DC Rebirth. So it was a bit of a roller coaster ride, but still a very emotional issue, very impactful issue, especially seeing the way Tim Drake's apparent death affected the other members of the book. There's a really cool scene between Batman and Batwoman about trust. So yeah, it ends up being a really cool issue. A lot of foreshadowing with what's going on. Apparently there's some big threat coming, and that was the reason that Kate Kane's dad, Jacob, did what he did in the first place. So we don't know exactly what that is. So overall, a very, very strong issue. It'll be interesting to see how the team dynamic is going forward without Tim Drake on the team, because he was kind of the, you know, Kate Kane's kind of a hard ass, and he kind of tempered her, you know, kind of filtered her orders, you know, through the rest of the team, and he was someone I feel like the junior members of the team really looked up to. So his loss is definitely going to be felt going forward. So I'm very interested to see the second arc of Detective. And now that the team has kind of been initiated with a trial by fire and lost a key member. So, yeah, great, great issue. I'll be interested, yeah, like I said, to see where the team goes from here, and also interested to hear the reaction. I do find it interesting that they put in right away that he's not dead. You know, I'm a little surprised that they didn't save that for next issue, you know, and at least give people a month to think that Tim Drake was gone. Very, very curious. What were your thoughts, Manny?
I was really surprised. I thought he was going to get out of it some way. I never even got a hint anywhere that he was going to die. But yeah, that when he died, that came to me as a surprise, as it did to the rest of the characters on the book. And then I really liked the following panels with Batman and Batwoman, and then also Stephanie and Batwoman. I'm sorry, Stephanie and Batman moment, emotional moment with their connection with Robin. So I thought that was really done really, really well. Then, you know, the panels where he's looking at the letter from the university, they show his hands shaking. So he Batman realizes that he, you know, he had a future besides just being a vigilante. I think that's when it really hit him the hardest. So it was done so well. And I'll see where they go from here, especially because, you know, just as quick as we're going through these emotions of, man, he's dead, here he is somewhere else. safe and sound, kind of.
Well, alive. So that was, I don't know about safe and sound, but alive.
Well, I mean, for a comic book character, that's kind of as good as it's going to get. as safe as you're going to get. What you were talking about earlier, I really want to see what the team does now without him, because he's kind of a pretty big piece of the team. Especially they finally came together and they were doing really well. And the shock of losing a member like Robin, well, what is that going to do to Spoiler, to Orphan? And, you know, so, because obviously their confidence is going to be rocked. Is it going to make them more of a less compassionate and a lot more down and dirty, or is it going to really question their motives and maybe weaken them a bit? So it'll be very interesting to see where it goes. Also, what the hell is going to happen with Robin?
Yeah, maybe a while before we see him again.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have Doom Patrol number 1, written by Gerard Way, art by Nick Darrington, and colors by Tamara Bonvillain. I'm not sure what to say about this book other than it was enjoyable, but I have no idea what I read. Spoilers for those who plan on removing their gyro sticker or from the front of their issue of Doom Patrol number 1. Apparently universes exist within gyros. So did not know that about that particular Greek food. I don't even know how to review it. It was really, really out there. I'm in for issue 2 just to see if I can make sense of what's going on. I feel like a lot happened in issue 1, but I'm just not sure what it was. And it might take an issue or two before I realize how much substance was in issue 1, because it did feel a bit light. And it was a relatively fast read for being as enigmatic as it was. I did enjoy seeing Robot Man. I thought the Casey Blank character was interesting. I don't know. Maybe it might be that this book is just not for me. It might be too out there for me. I tend to be a little more, pedestrian in my reading, you know. I'm not a big fan of, My Chemical Romance type music that gets all crazy and out there. Psychedelic, I guess you'd say. Psychedelia is not something I'm a fan of. I'm in for the next issue to kind of see if I can make some sense of it. As I said, I was entertained, but I also found myself, even as I was reading it, going, what the heck is going on? So, just not sure. What are your thoughts, Manny?
Well, I was really entertained, but in the wrong way, because usually when you're reading a book and you go back to appreciate the art or maybe to panels together, it's to really absorb the moment. In this case, I found myself going back a couple of times trying to figure out what the hell's going on and what's the deal with the gyros. And I to this moment, I still have no idea what the hell was going on. I wanted to really get it because I was entertained, but there's some guy on like a piano or something, and it was, you know, what's going on with Niles Calder? It was just weird. And I might be in for 2, I might not. Definitely not on the top of my stack. I don't know. It was far out there. I can tell you it's not for me, but I'm kind of intrigued to maybe figuring it out in the next issue.
All right, well, let's move on to Flash number 6, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Carmine Di Gian Domenico, and colors by Ivan Placencia. Can I just say, now you did read this book, right? Manny, you read this one? You caught up on
Flash? Yeah, I read it.
Well then, okay, spoilers, if you haven't read it, because there's a big reveal at the end of the book. So if you're not caught up with Flash, again, you may want to skip ahead. But did I not tell you? I told you who Godspeed was.
Yeah, I saw that coming a mile away.
They tried to trick us. They tried.
No, it didn't work.
To trick us. But was it you that doubted me, or was it Jaden?
No, it was Jaden. I was with you.
I just knew it. You just knew he was going to turn out to be who he turned out to be. So, that being said, I thought this issue was done really well. If there's anything I didn't like about it, it's the fact that Williamson is exploring this Barry Allen being spread too thin thing, which I feel like has already been done. And we talked about this right from the start of the first issue, about how we felt that, you know, with the Rebirth issue and also issue one, that we felt like he was kind of retreading some of the ground that had already been covered, specifically mm-hmm. by Francis Manapole and Brian Buccioletto. But, you know, this is a story he's been dying to tell, and everything else about the story is kind of new and interesting. And so, other than that one little nitpick, I'm enjoying it for sure. I will say that I did really like the way Dijon Domenico rendered Godspeed. I thought that was done really yeah. well, but I'm still not on board with the art. And one of the things that really made me realize this was the fact that last issue there was a different artist, and it really showed how much different the book could look and what a different feel it would have with a different artist on it. And so in a way, going from that back to Dijon Domenico almost hurt it even more, you know, making me realize. And that's not to say, now the artist that did issue 5 was Kurt Watanabe, and it's not like he's some burning down the house great artist, but just the fact that he's not like this, you know, high in demand artist or whatever. But I still feel like his art worked better on the book for me personally. I mean, that just goes to show you right there. I mean, there's certain things about Dijon Domenico's art that I like. You know, when he does the lightning, when he draws Godspeed, like I said. It's done very well. But overall, I don't know, the art just isn't strong enough to stand up to the, for me, to the story that Williamson is trying to tell. So yeah, I like the colors. I like the lightning. And just the fact that, and I've said this before about the art, his art is best when he's drawing quiet scenes, like right at the start where he's drawing Barry sitting at the desk, August is in the background. That's a cool looking panel. It looks good, but when he starts trying to draw movement, and the action scenes, it just kind of falls apart for me. It's unfortunate, but it'll be interesting to see what goes on now that we know who Godspeed is, and the fact that he seems to be more powerful than Flash, that he's able to, he can move so fast, he can be in two places at once. I mean, that's fast. So, yeah. Cool story. Art not so great. And a bit of an I told you so when the identity of Godspeed is revealed. What do you think?
Yeah, I saw that one coming. So when they reviewed, it was kind of like a, oh, okay. But actually, what caught my attention is that this specific issue, I really liked the art. I don't know why. And then I had to go back a couple issues and see if I still didn't like the art from the other books, and I still didn't. I don't know if the exact, maybe it was the Godspeed panels that really put it over the edge over the other ones or what, but I like the art in that this specific book. It just seemed a little bit cleaner than it. It is a step down though from the last issue. I think you're right. The last issue that should, I like the artwork a little bit better for the Flash. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, because right from the beginning he was very stubborn about his brother's case. And he seemed to have a little bit of vengeance in his dialogue, or at least what he would call justice. So I it's things like that really made it obvious that he was Godspeed.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have Green Lanterns number 6, writer Sam Humphries, art by Will Conrad and Jack Hebert or Herbert. Not sure which it is. H-E-R-B-E-R-T, and colors by Blonde. Again, Green Lanterns, not my favorite title. I'm actually out on this book, but I did get the advanced copy, so I went ahead and read it. Appears to be the end of the first arc, the first Red Dawn, the Red Dawn storyline. We don't learn any more about the Emerald Sight power that Simon Boz has been exhibiting. We do see Jessica make a construct, however. But it's just one, and it doesn't seem to be any particular kind of whatever. It just seems to be like this green flower-looking thing that she just grows up to a big size and just kind of uses it to bash around Atrocitus and his constructs. And Simon and Jessica appear to be triumphant, and they go and free her sister, then head to Simon Boz's brother's house, where they meet the rogue Guardian, who introduces them to the Phantom Ring, which is basically a ring, a power ring that anyone can wear. So you don't have to be chosen. And I'm not, it doesn't say. What will be interesting will be finding out what powers it, if it's emotion or, you know, what. So that's interesting. This could end up being a very, very important book down the line. In the Green Lantern mythos, because it's this first appearance of this Phantom Ring. And also, we find out that Blease has... She's made a realization. You know, she was cured very momentarily by Simon Boz of the rage, and now that she realizes that she can be cured of the rage and not die, which is what always happened to Red Lanterns in the past when they were cured of the rage... Because supposedly when you become a Red Lantern, the rage replaces your heart and you no longer have a heart. So if the rage is removed, you don't have a heart, no way to keep yourself alive. Apparently that's not the case. And she wishes to be healed. So there's that subplot going on. And there's also a little something that happens at the end that basically hints at the fact that maybe Simon and Jessica weren't as successful as they believed themselves to be in stopping Red Dawn from happening. Maybe there's things going on that's beneath their notice, or things that escape their notice that are going to bring them back into contact with the Red Lanterns going forward. So I know I said I was out on this book, but this was a really strong issue, and I'm very curious to see if the next issue is going to shift away from the green, from the Red Lanterns as an antagonist, and what the difference might be if that's the case in telling the story of Jessica and Simon. So I'm probably going to go ahead and pick up the next issue. Plus, I want to know more about this this Phantom Ring. The art by Conrad and Herbert I thought was done really, really well. Jessica shows a lot of emotion in her face throughout the issues. I thought the Phantom Ring looked cool. The art is top-notch. Really love the art in this book. If I had anything to nitpick about it, there are times when maybe it gets a little bit too photorealistic for me. But overall, I thought the art was really strong. And yeah, really, really good issue. Probably the best issue, most intriguing issue of the series so far for me. What did you think?
It felt a little cheesy to me.
I could see that.
And then just the way it kind of they kind of wrap it up, it just seemed really convenient that she ends up making a construct, and that little thing ends up being the difference for Atrocitus to and the crew to leave Earth. And then now they're whatever the next phase of their plan is, they're, you know, they're twiddling their mustaches like, wahaha, we'll be back.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe the reason it was so easy is because, you know, they did want to fool Simon and Jessica into believing they'd won. I will agree with you that their victory celebration was a little cheesy, in as much as they haven't liked each other to this point, and all of a sudden they're buddy-buddy because they won.
Yeah, exactly. But,
you know, we've seen that on sports teams in the past where people haven't gotten along too well, but especially in football, you know, divisive locker rooms and people not getting along, and you know, 1 week when they lose a game they shouldn't and they're at each other's throats, and then, you know, they win the next game and the next game after that, and all of a sudden it's one big happy family. So I'll chalk it up to that.
No, yeah, but the artwork on it was fantastic, so that helped it out a bit. I love some the scenes with Jessica where she's coming forward when she first makes her construct. I thought that was beautifully done. Colors, inking, the whole complete panel, splash page was done really, really well. So I like that, but just some parts of it afterwards in between got really cheesy. So that kind of made me roll my. You know, I love me some Green Lantern, especially Jessica. So, definitely looking forward to the next. And I'm very, very intrigued by this Phantom Ring.
Yeah. I really want to know more about that. All right, next up we have Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 4. Writer Robert Venditti, artist Ether Van Sciver, and colors by Jason Wright. Well, you talked about twiddling your mustache. Here we go with Sinestro. Let me talk about the art first. It's Ethan Van Sciver. It's Green Lantern. So it's quality. The only nitpick I have on Van Sciver's art is I don't particularly care for the way he draws Sinestro. And it's probably because I liked the way Brad Walker drew Sinestro in the Sinestro title so much. And I just feel like Van Sciver, he's over-detailed. Sinestro's over-detailed. You know, it's like zooming in on like somebody like so closely that you see all the little flaws in their skin or whatever. And I feel like that's kind of what he does with Sinestro. It just doesn't quite work for me. But I love his Guy Gardner. I love the way he draws Hal Jordan. And I love what Robert Venditti's doing with the story. I'm very intrigued. I want to know what the heck. I mean, I knew that was Sornik that had Hal Jordan. That was a really cool scene. I loved how she had his power ring sealed off in that little canister, and it was trying to get out with the tink, 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 tink. That was a really cool visual. You know, then we have the other, you know, the other visual later on with him being all stitched up. So it's like, what the hell did she implant in him? And let me also say that I had gone on record as saying that I did not care for the way that Sornik had been drawn in in some of the previous issues. You know, I loved the way that that Brad Walker had drawn her in the you know, the Sinestro book. I thought it was, you know, very well done, looked great. I mean, I have an original page that has her on it, so clearly I like the way that she looked. And then in the previous issues, I just didn't I didn't like the way she looked, and specifically it was her hair. You know, they drew her with like this giant, like, helmet of hair looking thing, and I didn't really, I mean, if it wasn't for the red skin, like, if I were to see a black and white picture of it, I might not even recognize who she was supposed to be. And I don't know, for some reason, maybe because I like her as a character so much, it just really bothered me that she looked, like, so different and so nearly unrecognizable. And so it's nice to see with Ethan Van Sciver doing the art on this book, how much she looks like herself again. And another part of the reason that it bothered me so much is because these, and this is the Rafa Sandoval version of Sorenik. He draws everybody else so well. Like, I love his Sinestro. I love his Hal Jordan. And it's not that he draws Sorenik badly. You know, she doesn't look, it's not badly drawn. It's just she looks so different than how every other artist has ever drawn her that she's not recognizable, and it just bugged me. And so I love the fact that with Ethan Van Sciver back on the book, handling the rendering, that she's once again, you know, looks like her old self, you know, with the shorter hair. It doesn't look like a giant helmet of hair. But yeah, I am very curious to know what the heck did she do to him. Very, very curious to know. And of course, Guy is being Guy. There's some humor going on with that. We learn a little more about the fear engine, but not to the extent of how it's going to do what Sinestro purports that it's going to do. And then we see a cool scene with Jon Stewart and the rest of the Lanterns on the last page. So Venditti's moving the story right along. I really love what he's doing with Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. Very, very strong issue. Really, really enjoyed it. I can't wait for the epic battle that I know is coming with an underpowered Green Lantern Corps going toe-to-toe with the Sinestro Corps. And hopefully we'll find out just what the heck Sorenik did to Hal. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I have no idea what she could have done. Would she have put Parallax in him? Like, why did she have to cut him open? Ah, I just don't know, man. I mean, you look at the picture with the stitches, and she pretty much, you know, from stem to stern, she cut him open. You know, from the base of his neck all the way down, you know, past his waistline.
Yep.
Going to be interesting to see. So what were your thoughts overall, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 4?
A lot of the spotlight, again, goes to Sinestro and his power. I really like the scene, the panels where he's trying to find where Hal Jordan's at. And without thinking about it, he kills one of his own men because he doesn't specifically follow his instructions. I thought that was really, really cool.
Very Sinestro.
And they all... Sorry?
Very Sinestro, like I said.
Yeah. And then the other Sinestro moment that I really... that made me chuckle was when Guy Gardner constructs the truck, and Sinestro's just very, very calmly looking at it, saying, your ring can create a construct of any object your mind can conjure, and you create a truck. And then it says, how quaint. So I was like, man, that's very Sinestro-like. So, very entertaining issue in that sense, and you really get to almost see Sinestro kind of as that legacy character that he is. And at the same time, you're dealing with Guy Gardner now being naked, and then also with what you were talking about, Hal Jordan what the hell's going on there. So we'll definitely have to see the next issue.
All right, next up we have New Superman number 3, written by Gene Luen Yang, pencils by Victor Bogdanovic, inks by Richard Friend, and colors by Hi-Fi Design. First off, let me say, this is the first issue of New Superman where at no point did the main character of Kenan Kong annoy me. And I feel like he's growing as a character, which is what Gene Yang had promised me and what I come to expect from him, a very strong characterization. We also see that as a team, this new Superman and the Chinese version of Batman and Wonder Woman, these three are finally becoming a team. So that was good to see. We also learn that there are many more layers, and this is a much more complex story than we first perhaps believed. It seems like there's a lot we don't know about Kenan's father that ties in with this. The Ministry of Self-Reliance that Dr. Omen is a part of. They're privately funded, but yet they're a branch of the government, so how exactly does that work? There's a lot we don't yet know, but it's great to see these young heroes start to become a team. It's nice to see Kenan show some character growth, and while the book hasn't necessarily been what I've expected, this character growth is more what I expected, and it's nice to see it starting to happen. But I would pick up this book just based on the artwork of Victor Bogdanovic. The art is awesome. Love the panel layouts. Love the page layouts. I love the rendering. The facial expressions, everything. Again, Victor Bogdanovic is one of those artists whose work isn't necessarily known that well, but what's interesting is I could see him becoming an artist on the level of a Greg Capullo, which is very interesting because that's whose art I'm reminded of when I look at this. But it's also the fact that at this stage in his career, where he's at reminds me of where Capullo was, let's say 20 years ago. And by that I mean Capullo had a long epic run on the Quasar book at Marvel. It wasn't a high-selling book. It wasn't a book that a lot of people picked up. It wasn't a well-known book. And it's not a book even to this day that a lot of people think about or have read. But Capullo did, a long, long run on that book. And it was quality work. And now you put his name on a book, and there's people that will pick it up just based on his name and recognizing his name. And so I could see, in maybe 20 years from now, people will look back, or we will look back on this new Superman title the same way that I look back on that Capullo work on Quasar. And the fact that his art kind of resembles Capullo's in a way is just a coincidence in that. Because I'm sure there are other artists that you could look at. But Capullo he blew up on Batman and is so popular now. That's the artist that really comes to mind as far as popularity and name recognition nowadays. And I know you're out on New Superman, so we'll move right along to the next book, which is Red Hood and the Outlaws number 2, written by Scott Lobdell, art by Dexter Soy, colors by Veronica Gandini. This book's been up and down for me. I loved the Rebirth one-shot. Thought it was the best thing Scott Lobdell had ever written. I felt like the quality of issue 1 took a step back. Wasn't necessarily as enjoyable. The quality is back up to a high level with this issue. We were introduced at the very end of last issue to Artemis, and the dynamic between Artemis and a Red Hood, the banter, the put-downs that she has for him are absolutely hilarious. And at the very end of this book, So issue one, last page, is a giant splash page of Artemis. And throughout this issue two, we see them kind of just the very beginning seeds of them becoming a team, but not a team in the traditional sense, in that Artemis is so much more powerful than Red Hood. And like I said, I love the banter. But this issue, issue two, kind of echoes issue one in that the last page of this issue is a giant splash page, and it's Bizarro, who we know is going to be the third member of the team for Red Hood and the Outlaws. So just a really fun story. The art by Dexter Soy, he's another young up-and-coming artist. Again, I see a lot of growth just between issue one and issue two. Very well done. The action scenes, the double page spreads especially, are handled extremely well. Gorgeous, gorgeous to look at. I'm not familiar with Veronica Gandini. I don't know that I've ever seen her color work before these issues of Red Hood and the Outlaws, but her work is very good as well. A lot of greenish tones and bluish tones, as most of the issue takes place at night. But all the gunshots, all the sound effects, Red Hood's helmet, they all really pop off the page with some bright reds and oranges. So it was a really fun story. I think this is, this is basically the third Red Hood title that we've had since 2011. And it's probably my favorite one yet. Didn't know necessarily how such a weird team of a Red Hood, Artemis, and Bizarro, although Bizarro's not technically on the team yet, just didn't know how that was going to work. It sounded so weird to me. Based on this, the banter and the humor between Artemis and Red Hood, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. So, really, really enjoyed this book. All right, next up we have Suicide Squad number 2. This book was written by Rob Williams, pencils by some guy named Jim Lee, inks by Scott Williams, colors by Alex Sinclair. Backup pencils were Yvonne Reese, backup inks by Eau Claire Albert, and the backup colors were by Marcelo Maiello. So that backup team that did the backup feature, which was a Captain Boomerang story, Yvonne Reese, Eau Claire Albert, and Marcelo Maiello, that's the same creative team that did Batman issue 6. That we talked about last episode. So again, one of the things I'm finding that I'm not liking about this new Suicide Squad book is the fact that it does have a co-feature or a backup feature, and so the story just doesn't progress that much in each issue. It feels very rushed and very short. That being said, I loved Rick Flagg, especially in this issue. I felt like he got the kind of the most really cool moments, but again, because of the short length of the story, I feel like we're not necessarily getting as much characterization as I would like from these characters. And it's Jim Lee art, so of course the art's beautiful to look at, the last page especially. I'm not going to tell you what happens on the last page because it blew me away when I saw it. I was like, holy crap, that's the last thing I expected, and it was really cool. But again, I'm going to point out for the third time in this review, it just stinks that the story is so short and has to be shortened so that Jim Lee can stay on schedule. And so we're getting less story than maybe we would or should. Because I want more of what we saw on the last page. It might bother me even more with issue 3. Because based on what we saw on the last page, man, I want a full-length story dealing with that for the next issue. All that being said, you know, I don't like the fact there's a backup feature. The backup feature was stunningly good. It was so much fun, especially the art. Man, that art was so good. It's a Captain Boomerang story. I can't stand Captain Boomerang. He's always annoying to me. I did think that Jay Courtney did a great job portraying him in the movie. He was much less annoying than I've ever experienced him to be. And this issue kind of picks up right where that left off, in that he wasn't super annoying, probably because he was just dealing with Waller and none of his teammates, so he couldn't really bitch because Waller basically didn't care. And that's what I find so annoying about Boomerang, is that he's constantly complaining. And here I am complaining about him complaining, so there you go. But yeah, the backup feature was really fun, really well done. The pencils, the inks, the colors, all of it. Suicide Squad 2 was quality. I just wish the primary feature, the first part of the book, I just wish I had more. Just a couple more pages would have been nice. What did you think, Suicide Squad number 2?
I felt like it was... I can compare it to Capri Sun. Kind of just really quick. Because I like the team. I love the artwork. But like you, just fell short. And I like the new character that they had on there, Hack. She looked very interesting, being that she's such a Harley fan.
Yeah, that was cool.
But, I mean, the last time we kind of got a short story like that was when Jim Lee was on Superman Unchained. I mean, those issues just felt like
those were full issues, but it just had a lot of splash pages, basically.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That reveal at the end was I did not see that one coming. So that has me really intrigued for the next issue. But that is drawn very, very beautifully. Yeah, definitely in on Suicide Squad. And I mean, that's what they do. They go in and they kill a lot of people, and then, you know, they get their objective. And sometimes they almost drown doing it in icy waters.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. Speaking of Captain Boomerang, I mean, that was brutal. You think he's really gone?
Yeah, it was.
I don't know how he's not. I mean, usually, you know, like if his whole body had disappeared, whatever, I'd be like, oh, he got sucked into the place that the other guy came from. But clearly, based on, you know, his two boots left there and then one falls over, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, he's gone? What? Captain Boomerang? Really? Now, you're the one that says you always, you know, it's Suicide Squad, someone's always got to die. But Captain Boomerang?
Yeah, not Captain Boomerang. So that was a surprise for me, too. I wonder if he's really gone or if he's somewhere with no legs.
Or yeah. No feet. That was brutal. What were your thoughts on the backup?
Backup was okay. Like, that image of Captain Boomerang, what page is that? It's kind of like he's looking to the side and he's holding like a beer. It almost looks like a Todd Knock image because of just the way they drew the square in the back.
Oh yeah,
it's done so good. That's probably one of my favorite panels of the whole issue. Just beautifully colored as well. Definitely capturing Captain Boomerang and, you know, what he is. So yeah, the whole issue, front and back, was done really, really well. I too would like a little bit more character development in the main storyline.
Yeah, that art in this backup, man, is so strong. Yeah, really, really dug it. Did you notice that... So the first issue is The Black Vault Part 1, and the subtitle is, you know, The Black Vault Part 1, and then it's I Want to Be Sedated, which is the name of a song. You know, I want to be sedated. Mm-hmm. Issue 2, we don't get the title until the last page of it's The Black Vault Part 2, Blitzkrieg Bop, also the name of a song. So I was sure that you didn't notice that, so I thought I would point it out.
No, I didn't. I really didn't.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe the next one will be Bohemian Rhapsody, since that will, I mean, because it kind of ties into the, you know, the whole Suicide Squad movie thing. So. All right. Next up, we have Superwoman number 2, writer and penciler Phil Jimenez, inks by Matt Santarelli and Joe Prado, and colors by Jeremy Cox. I know this is another one that you didn't read. And, you know, I talked about the controversy with issue one, with the apparent death of Lois Lane, and it does appear that she's gone. We see Steel and his niece, John Henry Irons' version of Steel, show up in this issue. Looks like they're going to be supporting characters going forward. You know, leaving aside the fact that Lois Lane was killed at the end of issue one, I thought issue one was well done. That being said, I did not think this issue was well done, and it wasn't just because apparently Lois Lane is dead. This issue just felt very, very choppy to me. One thing that was good is it did feel like there was a lot there. A lot happens in this issue. If I didn't know better, I would think that it was more than 20 pages, because it seems like they squeezed in a lot. Kind of almost exact opposite of what we got from Suicide Squad, where it felt, I mean, they didn't get the full 20 pages in it, and you really felt it. So that was cool, that the story felt like there was a lot there. Even beyond the fact that I was disappointed that it appears Lois Lane is really gone, exactly what's going on in the story is kind of hard to follow, because it does get choppy at times. And as far as the art goes, there's a lot of small panels, and I guess that, and a lot of words, so I guess that kind of goes hand in hand with feeling like there's a lot there, there's a lot to read. I mean, I'm looking at one of the pages here. Let's see, let me count page numbers in these advanced copies. So let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So page 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 panels. And, you know, usually when a writer puts 11 panels on a page, the pencil's ready to kill him. Like, dude, why are you making me work so hard? So it's interesting that Phil Jimenez is the writer and he's the penciler, so he's doing it to himself. You know, and if you look at the previous page, it has 9 panels. The following page has 9 panels. So, yeah, there's a lot there. But I enjoyed Lois Lane as Superwoman in that first issue so much more than I enjoyed Lana Lang as Superwoman. And I don't know, I'm just much more of a Lois Lane fan. So the story's intriguing enough. I'll be in for another issue or two. And maybe I'm wrong about Lois. Hopefully. Maybe she'll somehow make her return. I don't know if Phil Jimenez has had plans all along for her to return somehow, at some point, in some way. Or if maybe just because of the outcry, she'll return. But it's just a little disappointing to see her gone so quickly. I just find the idea of her with powers so much more interesting than Lana with powers. So, this, I could probably do with reading this a second time to try to understand what's going on a little better. Or again, it may be one that I have to read multiple issues in a sitting, to try to, make better sense of it. So, quality artwork from Phil Jimenez, quality writing, but I think he's maybe trying to squeeze in just a little bit too much. So, jury's still out. Not as strong as the first issue, and Lois apparently is dead, so a couple strikes against it, but still in the batter's box. That's only 2 strikes. Jimenez can still hit a home run if he can manage to bring Lois back. That would be really cool. All right, the last book we're going to talk about that came out today is Wonder Woman number 6, written by Greg Rucka, art by Nicola Scott, and colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. And before I talk about this book, I don't know if you follow Nicola on Twitter, Manny, but she tweeted out yesterday that she's going to be on an episode of one of those Food Network specials where they're going to be doing like Wonder Woman cakes. She's going to be a judge.
Yeah, I saw that.
That is so cool, and I couldn't help but think of just a little more than a year ago, sitting down and talking to her for a good hour and a half at San Diego Comic-Con 2015, you know, both during the interview and after, you know, and her worried about being able to get enough work and you know, having recognition in the comic book community and getting her, needing to get her name and her face out there and everything. And I'm like, here you are, Nicole. It's so awesome. You're going to be on Food Network judging a Wonder Woman dessert contest. That's just so, so cool. Couldn't happen to a nicer. Yeah, couldn't happen to a nicer lady. She's so awesome. She's so talented. So really, really cool. As far as this issue goes, I mean, I don't know what else I can say about Wonder Woman. I've been singing its praises since it came out. You know, as soon as I heard Greg Rucka on the book, you know, I knew it was in good hands. And I just remember seeing that artwork go up on the screen at WonderCon and thinking, man, that looks like Nicole's art. Wait, is she on Wonder Woman? And yeah, I mean, this, you just take a look at this book and you know why. It's just a match made in heaven. The art is just great. It's gorgeous. I especially love the panel where Wonder Woman is coming out of the invisible jet on the beach. So it's like beach background, and then there's like this
just door.
Yeah, it just looks so cool. And I love the way she's able to capture Diana looking younger, you know, being that this is the year one storyline of the two dual storylines. I love the fact that all these people she meets on the base, even though they can't understand each other because of the language barrier, clearly they trust her right off the bat because they're taking pictures with her and everything. And much like with Superwoman, there's a lot packed into these pages. But in contrast to Superwoman, the pages don't seem as cramped. There's not as much dialogue. Rucka and Nicola still managed to find time and space to do full page splashes. And really digging the book. I love that we see Barbara Minerva because, you know, we've seen in the other storyline that's going on, the Lies storyline with the Liam Sharp art, that they have history there. It's not just the old black and white relationship of the Golden Age with Wonder Woman and the Cheetah. You know, just as recently as issue 5 of Wonder Woman with the Wonder Woman and Cheetah interactions, you know, Wonder Woman mentioning the kindness that Barbara Minerva showed her at the beginning. So I enjoyed the very next issue seeing some of that kindness. Really, really great story. Beautiful colors by Fajardo Jr. I love the lightness of the colors he uses. It brings some exuberance and gives it kind of an innocent feel, kind of a yesteryear feel that suits the storyline since this is Wonder Woman Year One. The only complaint I have about Wonder Woman is that it does alternate storylines, you know? Like, I want more of this story now, you know? Whichever story I read, whichever storyline it is, it's like, as soon as I finish one issue, it's like, man, I want more of that story. But then I'll read the other storyline that I want. Wonder Woman needs to come out 4 times a month. Of course, then it wouldn't have the incredible artwork of Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott on every other issue, so this will be a really, really, really great trade to have. Probably buy myself a nice hardcover and get Liam and Nicola to each draw something for me, one inside the front cover and one inside the back. And then, in fact, that'd be a great way to do the hardcover would be to have, if you look at the front cover, you open it up and that's year one, and turn to the back cover and that's the Lies storyline. You know what I mean? And put all like the normal back matter in the middle of the hardcover. Maybe that's how they'll do it. But Wonder Woman, right up there with Green Arrow, is the best title, best rebirth title, no doubt. What did you think of this issue?
I really enjoyed it, just like I've enjoyed all of Wonder Woman. I mean, it's pretty much what you just said about it. I mean, it's just so great to look at. And for whatever reason, some of my favorite panels are actually where Steve goes to his friend's house that had died.
Yeah.
And is interacting with the widow and now with his baby. So I don't know. There's just something about it being really grounded that I really liked. And then, you know, you kind of go back to Wonder Woman and she's having these visions where the goddesses and gods are visiting her. But, you know, right beforehand, Steve had just shown so much compassion and emotion for his friend's family. And so I really like that. They do a really good job at mixing it all up together. So it's, you know, to make just such a great book. And then you have Wonder Woman in various situations behind bars, getting off the plane, interacting with other officers, and all with these creatures, with the woodland creatures, I guess you can call them. You can see very, very clearly what emotional state she's in, whether she's sad, she's lonely, she's happy, excited, worried. So good. Artwork is so good on here. I mean, we could only say it so many times before it gets kind of annoying, but I mean, it's the truth. The artwork is phenomenal. And I would really interested to see where it's going to go from here, because obviously she's got some gifts.
Yeah, definitely. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course, our sketch gallery. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. Keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. Remember that Manny and I are going to be at Long Beach Comic Con this weekend, September 17th and 18th. At the Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California. Really great venue, very comic-centric show. A lot of great comic artists and writers are going to be there. Chris Anka, Brett Booth, Mike Choi, Peter David, Joe Eisma, Matt Hawkins, the legendary Russ Heath is going to be there. It's going to be my first time meeting him. Really excited for that. Kyle Higgins, Scott Koblish, Greg Land, Jay Lee, Todd Knock, Jimmy Palmiotti, Norm Ratman, Nick Spencer, the legendary Marv Wolfman, from Firefly, Adam Baldwin, Summer Glau, Jules Sate, Nathan Fillion. Also, Nathan Fillion and PJ Harzma are going to be doing a Con Man panel. Really looking forward to that. A lot of great voice actors from the G.I. Joe cartoon, as well as Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, and Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin from Batman and the Animated Series are going to be there. Go to longbeachcomiccon.com to buy your tickets. You can get pre-purchase your photo ops with some of those people that I mentioned there, if that's what you'd like. Great cosplay presence at this convention, and also very comic-centric show. So I very much recommend it. So thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.